Today's sponsor is Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/letstalk.
Bada, 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 bada relatively successful because they understood the importance of one thing, and that was to learn how to own and control their resources, because that was the whole purpose of slavery. Slavery was basically to maldistribute almost 100% of all this nation's wealth, resources, privileges, and controls all levels of government into the hands of the dominant white society. It was very effective. It did an excellent job. Slavery came into existence in the 1500s. It had a very specific purpose. Slavery was an economic issue, not a social issue. And so black folk learned that even as slaves, they might not have been well educated, but they were stupid. They figured out that he who owns and controls has the power. And so when slavery ended in the 1860s, 1966, at that point in time, they learned something else from the radical Republicans who came out and said that black people in America can only be one of two things. Either you're going to be slaves or you're going to be free. To be free, you must minimally, these blacks must minimally, 5 million, almost 5 million blacks must minimally have 40 acres of mule and $100 given to them coming out of slavery if they're going to play this game. Because at that time in slavery, black folk were the primary generators of wealth on the earth. This country had invested over $8 billion just into slavery. That's more money than all businesses and all levels coming put together. And black folk as slaves, they knew the importance of wealth and owning and controlling. And they want that 40 acres, a mule, and $100. And Congressman Thaddeus Stevens, Charles Fussman, and Benjamin said that on the floor of the United States Congress in the 1865 Civil Rights Law. Give black folk 40 acres, a mule, and $100. And Andrew Johnson came, when he became the president after Lincoln's assassination, he killed the bill. They came back again in 1866 again, saying black folk have to have resources to be able to compete. And then later on, they converted that to the 14th Amendment in 1868. But in the meantime, black folk left slavery, not only controlling anything. Black folk left slavery after 400 or 500 years, penniless, poor, disorganized, no religion, no clothes, no food, no animals, no homes, no land, no tools, no weapons, nothing. And white folks would go out there and compete. And unfortunately, our leadership didn't understand that. You cannot compete not owning anything. But a few blacks got the word. They said, well, we got to do is try to get some of that land at 40 acres and a mule. It definitely took a toll on black male-female relationships, especially in the 1960s, because in the 1960s, black men and black women, they were doing what they were supposed to have done for a long time, which was fight together against white supremacy, against racism. And they were doing this with the civil rights movement. So what happened, people had to come in and infiltrate and have a divide-and-conquer strategy between black men and black women. In 1964, government came in and they pulled black women to the side, and they started to classify black women and women in general as minorities. In 1964, that's the first time they classified women as minorities. So they started to give them set-asides and benefits, and then they created the feminist movement, and a lot of sisters branched off into that, and that kind of created a rift because a lot of sisters stopped fighting for civil rights, and they started to fight for women's rights, but women's rights weren't being jeopardized in the black community. Our first priority was racism, and we should have dealt with that first.
We wanted to be free. We didn't need any boundaries. We need no man to tell us what to do. Well, we hadn't had no man to tell us what to do anyway. You couldn't tell us what to do in slavery. So who, you know, we didn't really have no fight with you about that. That was the white woman's fight with our man. But we took it on. I want to be free. Ain't no man going to tell me what to do. And then women started having babies, what they call out of wedlock. And then that got to be okay, too. Oh, all right. Once it got accepted by society, all of the rest of the people, then it was okay then to just have a baby. In fact, I don't even want him for nothing but to just have a baby. And then we start saying, oh, I'm going to be the mother and the father. All kind of nonsense. And so what happened was that movement, and there never was a sisterhood in the women's liberation movement between the black woman and the white woman.
Because you have to understand, in the tactic of the art of war, when you want to destroy a stronger enemy, you have to get rid of the cultural perspective of authority. So what you do, you have to destroy the man in the society. And that's exactly what they did. I talk about this in my book. You have to destroy the masculine principle, which is the head of the family. That's part of it. The other part is to get rid of the environment and the ways and means for the head or the authority of that family to become and stay the authority and the head of that family, and that is to be the provider and the protector. take away his means of providing, take away his means of protecting his family, and he no longer has any rights or any kind of power. So when you have done that, you have now undermined the glue that keeps the family together. Men don't have to be men anymore. So what's the best thing to do? Since you're giving so many favors to women, I might as well be a woman.
His whites are involved in their genetic survival, and they are threatened by black male masculinity, then it will occur, I have to reduce his masculinity. And we just recently had the president at Morehouse have to say the male students cannot wear high-heeled shoes and dresses and hairy purses. So something is happening, again, within the total context of a system of racism and white supremacy. Neely Fuller, who wrote the textbook for victims of racism a number of years ago, in the late mid-70s, he used to say, in a system, because he was the first person to talk about racism as a system, and he said that as the system of racism and white supremacy moves on, the system is going to have black men wearing dresses. Now, to hear that in the 70s, people said, oh, this is way out. And here we are. You see, there are some black pediatricians who are saying we are developing epidemic levels of the feminization of young black males. So I say the pan sagging and sagging down is just subconscious invitation for homosexuality. You see, it's revealing the buttocks. See, so the pants are getting lower and lower and lower. The next step is to step out of the pants altogether. And so you step out of the pants, you will put on a dress. The feminization is an essential ingredient of white genetic survival. And the only thing that can prevent it is black people becoming conscious, will become determined that this is not going to happen to them, because if the black men are destroyed, then the black people are gone, and we have the state of genocide.
But when I see every black man in the movies in a dress at some point in their career, I'll be sitting there and I'm like, wow, this black man wearing a dress. This happened to me. I'm doing a movie with Martin.
Yeah.
The movie's going good. So I walk in a trailer, I'm like, man, this must be the wrong trailer because there's a dress in here. They come in. The writer comes in. I think he's writing. He's like, Dave, listen, you got this hilarious thing where Martin's sneaking out of jail. So he disguises you as a prostitute. He put this dress on. Martin's in costume. Nah, I'm not doing that. I don't feel comfortable with that. But that should have been in a discussion. You don't feel comfortable with it. I mean, it's a hilarious bit. All the greats have done it. Oh, well, if all the greats have done it, it's kind of hacking, right? You're right. So why don't we just not do it? Because I don't feel comfortable wearing a dress. Oh, come on, Dave. Listen, we got it all set up. We're supposed to shoot. Every minute you waste costs this much money. You know, pressure comes in. Huh. Now I'm not wearing no dress, man. I'm funnier than a dress. Just give me something funny to say. I don't even wear no dress to be funny. Am I Milton Berle? And then finally he's like, and he leaves, and then like the director comes, Dave, it really would be great if he wears the dress. What is this, Brokeback Mountain here? So, where the dress? I want to wear the dress. I want to wear this dress. You know what I mean? Oh, gosh, that's so difficult. They leave. Now the producers come, come on, David, would be so... I mean, and then I started thinking about all the comments that I've seen. Man, you know, Sean, I was putting us in these dresses. But the minute it was clear, I was adamant, I'm not wearing a dress. I'm not wearing a dress. All right, fine. Think of something else. That comes back 10 minutes later. The whole new scene, how did you write the scene so fast? You know, it's like, so you got to take a stand. Why,
Go find me. It's definitely easy to find an American prisoner.
King of beer now.
1% of your prison will be black, if you don't go black, go have the businesses and industry. There's a direct link, black-owned practice group economics, black-owned practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up, as I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of ways in which it's economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industries and put that.
Today's sponsor is Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/letstalk.
Greetings, greetings, greetings. I had a temporary technical glitch. I'm waiting on Mr. Talk's arrival at the moment. You're listening to live and direct to Cloud Nation. I want to greet all our BTR family, the entire beloved family, and welcome to another Tuesday edition of Let's Talk with Eric Jackson. So Mr. Talk shall be in today. So temporarily, you got to bear with me temporarily. I know today's show, from listening to the archives, is dealing with my brother's keeper, and so I know. It's definitely going to be intense. It's going to be very interesting. I know a lot of people have some things to add and say, and I'm sure there are some stuff you guys were talking about yesterday that you probably want to continue that a little bit of that today. So we're going to jump into all that. The stuff you heard previously was a first clip came from Dr. Claude Anderson. Then you heard a little excerpt from Hidden Colors. And then we close with destroying the images of black males. And so had some tech glitches here and there. This was unplanned. So I just hopped in, emergency procedure. And, the first thing I'm going to say regarding today's hot topic is I want to look at it from a broad perspective. And kind of try to put some things into context. And when we look at several of the ongoing events from Ferguson to all the way back to Occupy Wall Street to ISIS and the stuff that's going on over there, and to the countless examples of cop on citizen crime, because we keep seeing that happen. Police officers in a police state taking over, impacting everybody, particularly in America. We're experiencing that time again. The militarization of our law enforcement, that's been happening. We also continue to witness land grabbing being practiced in every country, but particularly in America, we're witnessing that. We saw one of the biggest ever examples of foreclosures that crushed beyond the housing market. It took away a lot of home ownership across the board, black, white, you name it. But, of course, those who are seen as the least of these suffered the biggest blow. And so we see tremendous impacts in our economics, great job loss, countless examples of homes being taken away, countless examples of medication and proper health care being provided for. We see de facto governments in play. We see these race wars back and forth, and we see systematic oppression. We continue to see a variety of different forms of adversity. And a question we have to continue to ask when we look at what we've done historically within our communities, you do have to ask that question, am I my brother's keeper? will I look out for those, starting within my community, and even will I even look out for my own family members, my own neighbors, my own friends, and so on. And so, yeah, that's a big question. That's a big question and a constant question that we ask, I believe, is asked daily. I want to play one more clip, or two more actually, but I'm just going to play one before we get into people talking, and I'll play another one later on after we get to going and I get to hear from you guys and you guys add your comments, your statements, and help me get up to speed, because after all, I wasn't here yesterday. You guys were. So I know there are some things that you guys definitely want to express, among other things. And so we're going to start opening up the phone lines in a few seconds. I know Mr. Cox should be here shortly. And so we're gonna start working that on in. But first, what I did want to do is I did want to play one more, like I said, one more clip before we get into the discussion. And then after that, you know, I'll wait for you guys to chime in, see if you guys are ready to say what you need to say. And then, depending upon, you know, how the discussion is going and what you guys are saying, that would determine whether or not I will come back to this other clip that I have that I wanted to play. So first, let me play this quick clip. Well, I need to talk first because I don't see the clip right anymore because of my technical glitches. But yeah, I'm going to play that clip, and after I play that clip, then we can get into the discussion. Ah, here it is. Good.
And the power to help them out. They won't have the economic base to really take care of their basic needs, so then you can control them any way you want to.
When you live in a poor neighborhood, you're living in an area where you have to have four schools. When you have four schools, you have four teachers. When you have four teachers, you get a poor education. And when you get a poor education, you're destined to be a poor man and a poor woman the rest of your life. Poor education, you can only work on a poor paying job. And that poor paying job enables you to live again in a poor neighborhood. So it's a very vicious cycle.
Times what it means. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside of their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must be quick to allow people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician with the money, Then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folks only control less than 35,000 or 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folks own about something like about 75 to 80. That's all. You own no cable system. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And so you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do it. And you have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folks all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. They're going to go after the weakest people and get their hands off their incarcerated. That's the black folks. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, well, who cares? There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an agent. See how many agents you can find in American prisons. They're going to be in there. So 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself up to get wiped out. And up to about 19 into the 1920s, black folk had the greatest economic achievement they've ever had in this country. It didn't occur under integration, it occurred under segregation. Those black folk had managed to acquire over 20 million acres of land towards the United States Census in 1920. 20 million acres of land. But between 1920s and 1950s, they lost almost all of it. Back in the 1920s and up to the 1940s, we had black broom factories, we had black mattress factories. Almost every black major city had at least two cab companies. We had black bus companies. We had black shipyard up here in Baltimore. When I say black bus lines, I'm not talking about just having three or four buses. We had over 500 buses. And this is in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Now, our bus company didn't just service just the black neighborhood. It serviced the black and white neighborhood. We had two black cab companies. We had the Harris Cab Company and the Campbell City Cab Company. So they used to have their own restaurants. They had the best nightclubs in the country. Blacks had two baseball leagues. Each baseball league had 18. They had over 500 of the best baseball players in the world. So what did they do? They wanted to integrate. So as soon as they put Jackie Robinson on the Brooklyn Dodgers, black folks said, we'll give up all of our black baseball leagues, black teams, and all our black players. We'll just get one black boy to play on a white team. The black folks stripped themselves of all their resources. They stripped themselves of their unity. They stripped themselves of their role models when all blacks used to live together. And they had their own role models. All the doctors and lawyers and teachers with the blacks lived all together. You had a sense of community. You knew each other. You trusted each other. You worked with each other. You participated with each other. You learned how to buy from each other, to sell each other, to support each other, to care about each other, to love each other. Where black folks up in integration, blacks never locked their home. Black folks are on an aggregated national disposable basis of collected income, they might be the ninth richest nation on earth. Right now, if I take all the black folks' money annually and aggregate it, they might be rich, they're richer than maybe Sweden, Canada, India, Pakistan, a whole bunch of countries, Thailand, folks most all put together. But the difference is, what I keep trying to tell blacks, it doesn't make any difference. Because it's not aggregated. When you aggregate something, you strengthen exponentially the power of it by multiplying factors, by putting them together and then piling it up, making it stronger. But unfortunately, we are the only people that don't want that occur. Because, you know why? Because traditionally, whites saw black folk aggregate as being a negative. And so, and we see everything through the eyes of whites. Particularly, any time anything that exceeds more than 6% of something is black, and whites are in charge of it, and you get more than 6%, that sets off alarm in the white society. If I move into a neighborhood, and I get denied, and I'm the only black, whites will accept the one black, the two blacks. But the minute you start getting up further than that, they go on alert. So by the time you get six, you know what happened then? They start putting their houses up for sale. If I go in an organization, I got one black in that organization. It's an all-white organization. They'll accept the one black or two blacks. But the more blacks you come in trying to integrate, that becomes a threat to the dominant society. And they would either move out of that organization, move out of that neighborhood, or even go to their school to take their kids out of school. And where are they going to move? They're not going to move to a more integrated society. They're going to move back with their own people. When a white person takes his kid out of a school, out of an integrated school, he's not going to go and try to find another integrated school. He's going to take his kid to a segregated academy, a charter school, or an all-white suburb.
Wow. I literally just got kicked off of the line. Never happened to me before on VTR. So either what I was playing was must have been too much for VTR, evidently. Anyway, so we're going to open up the phone lines right now. I know that was a lot of material to digest. So if you guys have any comments about what you heard or you just have anything in particular on your mind, feel free to press button number one, and we will open up your mic, and you can start sharing your thoughts on whatever it is you want to talk about. Otherwise, I will have to go back to, you know, playing some recordings because I don't have anything prepared for today's show. I'm actually going to be a co-host and kind of, you know, vibe off of the people. So I see Mr. Michigan is here, so let me let you in. Hey, how you doing?
Peace, brother. Can you hear me?
Yeah, peace. How you doing?
Yeah, I can hear you. Yeah, I was checking out that Dr. Claude you was playing. You know, I think it's always a good idea for us to focus on economics. So, but, man, you know, I don't know, man. I don't know why we won't listen to brothers like that, particularly when they've done the research, you know, and all of the math lines up. But we just, I don't know. Why do you think it is, man, that we won't, you know, take heed to stuff like that? I mean, he said by the year 2000, I think he said 14, he said blacks would be a permanent underclass. And I mean, mm-hmm. that shit was spot on. I mean, we are, yeah. I mean, it's coming out now that we are a permanent underclass.
Exactly. You know, it's disheartening for me, too, because, you know, one thing about entrepreneurs like yourself, you know, got people with that entrepreneurial spirit, they have just a totally different mindset. And I think one thing about entrepreneurs is that it's a natural part of our culture. I mean, if you look at our history.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, I don't claim to know all the answers. I'm a young guy. I haven't lived life that long, so it's so much I don't know. But in my opinion, I think a lot of it has to do with culture, with having a understanding of our culture, of, like you said, knowing our history, of seeking out the knowledge. I heard an elder from Detroit talking about this recently, and he was talking about, I think his name was Brother Dawu. I'm not sure if I'm saying it was Dawu. It was Dawu, I believe, but it was from the African History Network. And I know the elder, was talking about, you know, all these different historical facts and knowing a lot about our relationship historically in Africa with the stars, our relationship with the trees, even our relationship with the animals. And our understanding of that, but along with those things, our understanding of our economics and so many other things. And for some reason, so much of our history we know does not show up. It doesn't appear accurately in America. You know, they took a lot of the truth away, and so we get this watered down, or what a lot of people call whitewashed version of America. And so when we see Empire, we don't see us. And, you know, we don't see us in every big time historical event, every invention. And so when you take us out of everything in our culture, in my opinion, it kind of diminishes our value to ourselves. And then we take on, he said that if you don't have a history, then you build on the backs of somebody, a history somebody else gives to you, or a culture.
Yeah, and you know, and that's what's so frustrating, because when you, I mean, this is just a historical fact. There is no such, that there is no place on the planet where you have, well, particularly races, even ethnic groups, where two ethnic groups have merged their cultures, their thinking, their belief systems, and created this universal system or universal culture. And blacks, it's frustrating because blacks believe that somehow American culture was called American culture is somehow this universal culture, which, and this is why we have to be precise, America is nothing but a European expansion. So when you hear blacks saying, man, they took us out of the history books. Well, they weren't intending on writing America as a mixed history. These are European people, man, writing their own history. So why would they have you in the history books? You know, they say, well, why come in America they only start our history as slaves? Because they're writing their history. And that's what they interfaced with you at. They're not writing your history. That's where they start with you.
Yeah.
As you being their slaves. I don't even see how blacks are still arguing these type of points with all of the information that's available. I mean, all of the facts are in. I don't even see how blacks can argue that this is nothing more than a European expansion and a European culture. I mean, you can point to any variable that proves that. Why are we still arguing that point? And to me, go ahead, bro.
I'm sorry. Only thing I was going to say is, no, I agree with you, though. I know when I mention America specifically and us not being in the history books, I just mention it for the fact that, you know, for me personally, when I see the just the examples of America alone, when we, while in slavery and, you know, after, you know, antebellum era and all the way before civil rights, before the Civil War and after the Civil War, the various accomplishments that we had collectively, like not just the isolated individual case studies, but, you know, what we did as a group, you know, when I discovered it for myself, it was so empowering, and it gave me a totally different mindset, and it actually motivated me to it was the encouragement I need, so to speak, to push forward and to do certain things for myself that would help me self sustain myself. But I feel like when you know, as a young person, if all I see is growing up in a neighborhood like I did in Chicago, growing up in Inglewood, you know, I saw some of the most, you know, just some a lot of bad stuff. You know, you see some things that could just taint your image of yourself. And so when you get a chance to see things that reveals the beauty and the quality and the class and the essence of who we are, and that makes you proud of who you are, it changes your perspective as a young man. Then you don't have to look at the negative examples, and you start to realize that everything they told me, you know, them being the colonizers, was a lie. And then it makes me seek out even more my heritage, and even more to dig into Africa, and even more to stop embracing the falsehoods. I no longer, you know, rely on stuff that I might have trusted in before. It's like an awakening, and I think stuff like that helps for the kids that, you know, may not have people around them to really help, you know, to really give them input, the information they may need. They might not have been fortunate enough. I think they have to start somewhere where they can start finding identity. Because, you know, as a kid and as a young person, it's all about finding identity, searching for identity.
Yep.
That's why you have homosexuality and all these other things that confuse young people at an early age and then leads to adulthood, because we're always searching, trying to figure out, who am I? What am I? Why am I here? What's my purpose? You know, what am I supposed to be doing? And when you don't have those examples before you, or you have examples who haven't learned it themselves, and all they know is go to school, get a good job. Because, you know, some people aren't teaching us be an entrepreneur. Some people aren't teaching us you need to own something. Stop renting stuff. You know, so you need to save that money so you can invest in stuff. Stop going out there buying gym shoes and all that crazy stuff. You know, some of us didn't have that. So when you don't have that, it's just refreshing to have access to it. And let me bring in Pianki too, because I see you raised his hand. But go ahead.
You know, I was going to say, I think we can almost, you know, for certainty say now, if you don't have the minds of young Africans, I'm going to say before they get in about the seventh grade, now, I know there's some exceptions to the rule, but we're talking about the norm. If you don't acculturate them by at least the seventh grade, they're pretty much done. They will have had enough of the European identity and the European culture, the European way of thinking, the European outlook. It's almost like, you know, trying to do open heart surgery and a spinal surgery at the same time. And as it's one African organization, as their motto, it says, better to, it's better to raise a child than to repair an adult. It's better to raise a child than to repair an adult. And there's a lot of truth to that, particularly when you're talking about adults who have been acculturated into a system for 20, 30, 40, 50 years. I mean, that's almost a losing battle. But, you know, go ahead. I know Priyanka's on the phone, so I'll stop right there.
Yeah, I'm trying to let him in. I'm waiting for my computer to stop freezing. As soon as I want to let Priyanka, you know, as soon as it stops freezing up on me, I'm going to let him in. But yeah, it's a, for me, I'm going to speak for me and take ownership of my actions. For me, I'm doing a lot. Even now, there's a lot of unlearning that I have to do. Past stuff that I have to unlearn that I was taught from a lot of people that just doesn't line up with the African, you know, who we
right.
are,
right.
Africa.
Right.
And so daily, and I know you've seen some of the mistakes I've made just here. Some of the things I've done that are, you know, outside of, you know, on course of where I should be. It's a daily process for me. It's like I got to unlearn that and learn that that's wrong and this is wrong. And so for me, it's consistent. It's constant. It's constantly learning, like, that's wrong. The way you looked at that, all that, you may not want to stick to that. All what they told you about that, that's not really accurate either. So like, it's interesting because there's so many things that I thought growing up that was like, oh, you know, that's right. I'm going in the right direction, not knowing that if those people were indoctrinated by colonization in their minds, colonized by the mind, then there are certain things that even they, as well-meaning as they may be, could not provide for you. And it's not to discredit people who love you or anything, but it's if you don't know, you don't know.
That's all they knew. That's correct. That's all they knew.
That's what they knew.
You have to, that's all they knew. So, you know, that's all they could put in you. But, yeah, but, you know, I think with, you know, I guess if we get deeper into what are some of the potential fixes to see if you can recreate a black community in America, which I contend that you won't be able to, but, you know, I've listened to a lot of theories and a lot of shows and a lot of opinions and a lot of faith-based talk and a lot of hope-based talk. But, I mean, to this day, I haven't heard a formula that gets us where we mentally want to go. You know, these utopia black communities, you know, with little to no unemployment, functioning families, Afrocentric children, you know, on a mass scale, economies, black manufacturing, black banks, black schools, all synergized together. You know, I haven't heard a formula that gets us there yet. So I really want to hear one too, because I want to have the same hope that a lot of people have. But that part, I don't think you'll see that again. Not within the next 100 years or so.
Hmm. We got Yankee and knowledge in.
Claude Anderson has a good plan. Nobody wants to follow it in the order that he prescribed, in part, in whole or in part. You're talking about education and culture. Education and culture is last. You don't, the culture don't need to be worried about that. You can't change people. The culture is already there. You don't have no, I mean, individual groups cannot change that. That's dictated by music and dictated by dance, clothes, style, so on and so on. But the economy, the potential economy still exists. It just takes, like you said, where's your business? Foreign business, where's the cartels? The Mr. Talk and Mr. Knowledge cartels on school lunches. I mean, it's not rocket science. It's very simple to do. Not simple, but it's straightforward on what needs to be done. And people are doing it, too.
Yeah, yeah. I think you have pockets, but like I said, when you, for instance, I think if you want to see some type of massive movement or some type of momentous endeavor, you would have to go to a major city where you have a large black population. I have said this: if you want to attempt to try at creating this utopia black community, I think you have to have certain things on the ground. Or if you can find certain things on the ground, I would say that would be the place to start. One would be this. First of all, you have to have a population center that's full of blacks. That if you dig more deeply, I would say find a place in America where you have the most black manufacturing. I don't give a damn what it is, but currently where there's the most black manufacturing. Now, if that's one. Another one that you would look for, these are markers that you would look for. I would say find the place where you have the most mature black financial institution with branches, you know, spread throughout the city. That's another one. I would also say you would look for a place where underground you have a lot of black homeschooling and, you know, a number of African-centered elementary schools. These are just like markers that you can look for where I think the potential for building a large-scale black community, you'll have to have those things in place. I would say start with the business, though. I don't know what location in America you can find the most black businesses, and particularly you would look for some in the manufacturing. Or importing and exporting, I think that's where you would start at. I don't even know what city that is. Pianchi may know. Where do you have the most black manufacturing, not service businesses like liquor stores and rib shacks and pass along? I'm talking about black manufacturing. Do you know what that is, Pianchi, in America?
Yeah, it was in Detroit.
Yeah.
Hey,
we only have God that they move it, what they move it to.
I don't know. You know, there was a lot of black manufacturers in Detroit that was in working in conjunction with the automobile industry.
Yeah.
And
what would you say it is now?
Well, then there was some that was working in conjunction with the railroads down in Illinois, in southern Illinois, around right outside of East St. Louis. So where it is now, I don't know.
Yeah. We also want to welcome N2K. I know N2K is on the line as well. I wanted to let him know his mic was open.
What's going on, gentlemen?
Hey, how you doing?
Good. I just wanted to add that, you know, to me, black people are the perfect dichotomy. We like to talk about what's wrong. We like to talk about how we think it should be. But when it comes to actual implementation of anything, everything becomes divergent. And now, what really bothers me is that I'm hearing all of this talk, and I don't even know the age range of these black people, of this, what we have to do as a group and how we have to unite and how we have to sort of operate in some sort of monolithic way. To me, that's a communistic way of thinking, because it all starts with individuals. If individuals are not in that mindset, taking it to a group level is immaterial. It's just not going to happen. And I'm a firm believer that when individuals have that mindset, they naturally and be able to pull all this stuff together, which is nothing but networking. which in today's world is probably easier than it has ever been at any point in time in human history to network, because you don't even have to leave your house to do it. As long as you have an electronic device, as long as you have the internet, you can network with anybody, anywhere in the world at any point in time. So it's not like it's a difficult thing to do. It's not hard. It's just a matter of, like Pianki's saying, with Dr. Claude Anderson, here's a man who's taken the time to lay things out that black people talk about, but very few follow. What else can you do? You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. I mean, that's just how I look at it. How does the group dynamic work when the group is completely fractured? How do you pull a fractured group together?
Let me check. You know, one of the things that when you look at, see, people think that Europeans have they do have a European worldview, but I'm answer the brother's question in this way. When you're in a European country like America, a European doesn't have to say, I'm going to seek out a white bank to put my dollars in. When they walk out of their door, 10 of the 10 banks that they pass by on their way to work will be white owned. Now, you say, oh, that's simple for blacks to do. When you consider where blacks are, we can just stick with just that one instance, because we do know that will be needed at some point. When a black walks out of the door and says, I'm going to put my money in a black bank, where does he go? Say, let's pick a place where there's no black banks. You see? So it's not simple. That's the point I'm trying to make. It's not simple. It sounds like it's simple, but it's not simple. It's not that simple. And this issue about being an individual. Well, brother, that's what we have right now. We have black individuals getting down. You sound like a brother that you're probably doing quite well. We have a lot of black individuals who are doing quite well. But they don't have a race-based consciousness where they are organized, particularly around race. Now, if it's easy, how do you give them that consciousness? Get a beer on and run down the street and tell them? It sounds simple, but when you're living in a dominant culture and you're trying to create an alternative culture with all of those institutions, well-running, well-connected, wherever you have large pockets of African Americans, that's not simple. That's not simple to create. And if it's a world, we're doing a lot of talking. Well, to me, we've been doing a lot of talking, and because we've assessed it very well, and because we have taken the individualistic approach, that's exactly why we're in the condition we're in. We have to talk to it until we can assess this shit right and be very precise. We're going to be talking for 50 more years.
Wow. And we just brought in Offax. He just called in, so I just wanted to let him know his mic is open. So.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, good title, The Brother's Keeper. When you say somebody is your brother, you must have some you must identify yourself. You must have something in common. When you say someone is your brother, you want to have that trust there. When you want to keep your brother, it's some some loyalty and some respect. But in our society, if you talk about the black community as a whole, there is nobody's keeping their brother. Everybody's trying to be the man and the man. And the people just on different
type of missions. People have trouble identifying themselves. I mean, people are having a conversation of, are you black or are you not black? Well, I mean, come on. So, I mean, some of these conversations and some of these topics that we're talking about should be already established and move on. And let's start keeping each other in word about the trust and how we deal with each other socially. I just seen how two gentlemen agreed something verbally that they wouldn't do something. Another gentleman, an hour later, totally went against that agreement that those two brothers had. Why? I mean, it's so people have a different mindset. So if you're going to keep your brother, if you're going to be your brother's keeper, and you're definitely going to have some trust. And it's just not that in the black community. And I mean, just look at sometimes I was listening to a debate, and people were saying, well, the guy wasn't coming with references, but sometimes you can look at life as a reference. When you go to a book, someone else is going to be looking at life, and they're going to be giving that observation. But also, you have to look within your life and see why you don't communicate well with certain people in your community. And then that's the answer. So if we can try to solve that personally, that I think that's a, I think we can take each individual situations and come together collectively. I understand about this individual and group philosophy. The Asians, they in business, they always have a team-oriented focus. I understand that. But the individual is not separated from the group. So if we can have a balance of individual ambitions and goals and try to get with people with like minds and come together as a group, I think that should be. But I just think a lot of people have just trouble on the petty stuff, identifying who they are. Are they an American? How should we vote or not? These old arguments, Cloud Nation, I think it should be put to rest and move on certain things. So we can start focusing on, dealing with each other,
Let me just interject something real quick, because I do apologize for this. When I talked about individuals, I wasn't clear on what I'm saying. I'm talking about from a philosophical standpoint, in terms of a person's character, in terms of their particular makeup. I'm not talking about physical. I'm not talking about advancement. I'm not talking about, a person being successful in their particular field and going on about their business and making their money. And All Facts just alluded to it. So I wanted to be clear about that, because what he said is true. We get caught up in these consuming petty arguments about these little things that become great divides for us, so that when it comes to a group dynamic, it becomes very difficult for us to even sit down, have a discussion, and agree, even though we might be coming from a different position, that, okay, here's how we can do this, where you right. can still be what you are, who you are, I can still be what I am, who I am, but we can make it benefit both of us. I think that's the hardest part of it for us as black people, because from a philosophical standpoint, we're just all over the place. Well, I'm a black nationalist. Well, I'm a conservative. Well, I'm a Republican. Well, I'm a Democrat. Well, I'm a Christian. Okay. Well, I'm with the Nation of Islam.
Yeah. But I just want to say something real quick, and Mr. Michigan, I'm done after this. But I really didn't hear your comments because I just tuned in 2K, but I was tuned to more so what Michigan's saying, because I know what he's saying, that group and that individual type of basis, a type of thing. But when it comes to, we do it all the time. I know I don't have the same political ideas as my coworkers. I know I don't. But at some point, at a certain hours of a day, we come together and we come together on a goal and a mission. Now, let's take that in the black community. Just like we were saying, we may have our little differences, but what is the common goal? Can we get some work done together? And I think that everyone is thinking that be real pristine and being perfect, everything is not going to be perfect. But, that's all I got to say.
All right, now, before we jump in again, I did want to let Sister Ngoni know her mic is open, so if she wanted to add a comment, this would be a perfect opportunity.
How you doing, Claro?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. Gentlemen, I just want to add a feminine perspective to things. And the question is, am I my brother's keeper? Well, I don't think so. But before I go into that, I would like to go back a little earlier. I don't know who is speaking, but the gentleman said, if you don't get them by the time they're in seventh grade, they're lost.
Michigan.
Okay. Michigan, yes. And he has some very good points that he always brings to the show, by the way. But I would like to say, as a grandmother and a great-grandmother, if you don't get them by the time they're 7 years old, you already lost them.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm going to take your word for it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then I want to agree with what Michael and N2K just said. In my view, I think that, no, we're not our brother's keeper, and I think that the problem that we have in trying to implement organizing our communities, quote, our communities, because that's really another myth, is that we don't understand the principles of freedom and liberty. And I think that's where we have to start. And I think N2K is absolutely correct. We all have to respect each other as individuals, as who we are and what we are. And then we come together with other like-minded people, like Michael said, on a goal and a mission. And then, you know, you don't have to be clones in order to get something done. You just come together, you do a task. Those people that agree with what Claude Anderson is doing, great, let them go do it. But we end up criticizing this one or that one because they don't see it the way we see it, or you ain't black enough, or this or that. You know, it's only about black against white, or if you say it's about the human race instead of just exclusively the black race, then you're your sister Tometa or something like that, you know, Uncle Tometa or whatever. You see, so I think that what I'd like to say is that the bottom line, right, because what most black people are talking about is collectivism. And what we need is to understand the principles of freedom, and then we need to respect each other based on those principles of freedom, because you can't give somebody else consciousness. And you don't know what else is here on this earth to experience. So you can't tell them what life path they're supposed to have. If you have something, you know, that is worthy to work together on, fine. If not, then find those people that will work with you on it. Now, one criticism I have of Claude Anderson's plan is that he organized it as an LLC. And to me, he's got the cart before the horse, because like Dr. John Henry Clark said, your culture is the basis of your economy. And before Claude Anderson's plan, Professor Amos Wilson left us a plan. I can't remember the name of the book. Perhaps maybe Brother Michigan might remember.
Power Economics.
Yes, sir.
It was Blueprints of Black Power.
Yes, sir.
Right,
so, you know,
right. I'm sorry.
And this is the last thing I have to say, and this is more a question than it is a statement, because it's something I've been grappling with. The fact of the matter is that whether we were here first, the majority of us, or whether we all came over here on slave ships or whatever, the reality of the situation is now we're here and they are too, and many other cultures are here. And
right.
I find that we refer to the Europeans all the time, or Asians, and I think we have to recognize that they have their culture intact when they come over here. So that puts us one down right there. And this, you know, the whole concept of the people that are running things over here is right on the dollar bill, one people out of many. So they have an agenda, you see, and I think we need to recognize that when we talk about having our own, you can't build something that you consider your own on a platform that somebody else is controlling. We talk about being entrepreneurial, and I know we have to take care of our creature needs and, you know, housing, and try to leave something for our families and the generations to come. But the reality is we don't own anything here, because we don't control the currency. We don't control the land. We don't control even that what we build on the land. All that is in the state. So I think we need to get realistic that it doesn't mean we can't do better than what we're doing, but the concept, I think we need to reevaluate it, and I guess I've said enough. I don't mean to ramble.
Well, let me say this. Now, the last part of the sister's statement, you know, I think we do need to be realistic about what it is we actually can achieve over here. I think that's a very good point. I think that would keep our ears out of the clouds. I'll give you a good example. You know, at one point we was running after, you know, civil rights. Well, what the hell is that? I don't know nobody named Civil. I don't think nobody on the phone has a relative named Civil.
No, but I can tell you what the definition of that word is in Latin. It's civili, and it means slave laws. That's exactly what we got.
So, but, you know, and that's why I gave you an example of if you find a population center where blacks populate, like Philadelphia or Detroit, you know, I think that the possibility of attempting to create, you know, a functioning community, if you're going to try a place, it would have to be done in one of those population centers. Because what would happen then, if you have Muslims and Hebrews and black nationalists and Pan-Africanists, and if there's a bank with branches all over the city, by default, you wouldn't have to tell them to put their money there. They would, just like whites do, put their money in Bank of America, Chase. So that's why I said you're not going to change everybody's consciousness, but if it's made available, if the tenets of a community is made available within a population center, I do believe that Moors, Hebrews, Muslims, Christians, they would put their money in the bank if that infrastructure was in place.
Brother Michigan, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Now, y'all, brothers, don't start yelling at me now because you know where I'm getting ready to go with that. Okay. First of all, you're talking about black banks. We don't have any money. We have debt notes. And as you can see, the Federal Reserve is now withdrawing those Federal Reserve notes. I could go into a little history. We're not even supposed to be using those, but I won't go there, okay? No. Those were supposed to be internal currency for the District of Columbia, Washington, D.C., which is a corporation, 10 by 10 square miles, and that was supposed to be internal. They hired the Federal Reserve to have their own private currency. They have their own private army. They have their own private laws, okay? And we are being charged a usury fee for using those Federal Reserve notes. Now, I want to say this because I'm not a defeatist, okay? I believe that we can do better. There's a system that's been around for 20 years called Ithaca Hours out of Ithaca, New York. People have talents. They go and volunteer and do work, and they can trade. They have an actuary system. They can trade services and goods for the hours that they put in the community. See, we need to think like that, because if they withdraw the currency, you're talking about putting money, which we don't have, which is Federal Reserve notes, which is promissory notes, which have secret liens on them, in the bank. And then what you're going to do when they just look, you know how many banks are going out of business in the United States right now and around the world? They're planning on stripping this down to about nothing. If you go look at Google Images and Google United Nations Agenda 21 map, you will see that the agenda is to let North America go back to grassland, okay, and with very little human activity on it. So that's what the force that's working against us. A lot of people go running out in the rural areas because they don't want to be caught up in the cities when the, you know, if the economy collapses, and it's, you know, it's going to change. And they don't know that they're running right into the force that's trying to push everybody up into the cities and stack us and pack us like rats. So, you know, and I'm not saying just because that's going on we should give in to it. No, we shouldn't. We should resist. But I think that the concept of black banks, we have to remember that doing that is investing in the very system that's trying to kill you. You know, Wall Street was bought out 4 years ago by the Germans. The Germans own the New York Stock Exchange, okay? And also, when you invest in that, you have to remember that our ancestors was the first commodity traded on Wall Street. Why would we want to support that system? So we can create other systems, like I just gave an example, Ithaca Hours. That means that if they withdraw their currency, we don't need their currency because we'll have our own way of trading with each other until we can perhaps become in a position to create our own currency. What do you think about that, Brother Michigan?
Yeah, Yeah, I understand exactly what you're talking about. In my opinion, I think the focus part of it would be on connecting to Africa. That's what I see. But I understand what you're saying. But when you're in a dominant culture, there's no question that you will be mimicking some of what the dominant culture is doing. I understand that very well. So if those types of communities gets us into manufacturing, like you say, and trade amongst each other, I mean, you're going to need toilet tissue to wipe your ass. Is any of them manufacturing toilet tissue? I'm not trying to be funny. If those type of trading communities are producing, the types of mechanized, manufacturing that we can then, give out to our people, then that's exactly where you should go. I would agree with you 100%. So it wasn't necessarily about the currency.
I didn't understand what you just said about manufacturing. Sorry, I couldn't hear well. You said what?
Okay. Yeah, I said that if these type of trading communities that you're talking about, like in New York, I would imagine if those people are wiping their ass with toilet tissue, at some point somebody would have to be manufacturing it. So if they're trading, we're talking about services, you said goods and services, where you're going to need soap, toilet tissue, so these are things that somebody has to manufacture, so you're going to have to, be into that type of technology. I don't think you're going to be able to get around that.
Well, how are you going to, Brother Michigan, when corporations right now are running all the small mom and pops out of business? That's the agenda of Agenda 21. They want to control everything. So, we have a habit of trying to imitate others, and we're going to have to get creative and find what's going to work for us, because the people in Ithaca, New York are living in Ithaca, New York, and using the products that are being manufactured by the same corporations that we get the products. But that wasn't the point. The point I was trying to make, telling you about Ithaca, ours is it was a way for us to be able to have a system to be able to do business with each other if the occurrence comes that we don't have currency available. That happened in the 1920s. They withdrew.
Yes, I would agree 100% with you. I would agree 100%. Yes.
That's all.
Yeah,
I wanted to
get in on this a little bit. Because I think a lot of you guys, you made some real, real good points. So I'm just taking notes because I'm learning a lot. I appreciate particularly some things that were highlighted and echoed by N2K, Mr. Michigan, bringing on the knowledge again too, and Sister Ngoni, you continue to bring the wisdom. So I appreciate all that you guys are saying. And I agree with pretty much everything you guys are saying. And I would, one of the things I was thinking about is, as we continue, because people are, like you guys said, some are doing it in pockets, but as we continue to progress and develop these industries and whatnot in our communities and so forth. I do think it is good to think bigger picture, like infrastructure, like the ability to live outside of what some people call the grid, but the ability to understand what parts of the world that are truly independent, where we can access and literally create new formed colonies, so to speak, a new form land where we can that has good quality land, bigger pictures, being able to do create your own technology, energy supply, your own water system, your own implement your own laws and so forth. I do think that's real important, and like you said, your own economy. When you look at the big scale. And I agree with what Mr. Michigan was talking about concerning the
the current state of many of our companies not being able to take care of some of the bare necessities for many because of the gross number of unemployment, the gross number of the small number of businesses that we do hold, and a small number of prosperous companies that we have in comparison to other groups. So I see and I understand what both of you guys are saying, because on one side you have, like you said, there's debt investing in the current system and infrastructure, and then on the other half, on the side, there's also that in the present, in the moment, how to live and pretty much continue to sustain yourself while stuff is happening in the here and now before we get to that point where everything, where we have, like you said, pushing towards a utopian-like society, so to speak. I think that's how Mr. Michigan coined it. And so, like I said, this is more of a learning experience for me. I'm learning a lot for what you guys are saying, and then, you know, I try to do my own research and study outside and try to implement and apply certain things outside as well. So I'm going to bring Pianki back in because I see he has his hand up, and I'm sure he wants to say a couple of things. Your mic is open too, Pianki. I don't know if you stepped in the way, but if anybody wanted to say something else, your mics are still open.
I do real quick. I want to deal with the go back to Africa myth. I lived in Ghana for 3.5 years. Now, that doesn't make me an expert on the continent of Africa. I visited Senegal for 16 days. That's the extent of my understanding of Africa. But I can tell you this. Europeans have certain countries that don't have to have a visa to come to America. Now, Senegal, we don't have to have a visa to go to Senegal. Okay. But the rest of the African so-called paper nations have yet. Now, Ghana, Flight Lieutenant Jerry J. Rawlins tried to do that when Bill Clinton was the president. And the legislation that he put forth still laying in Parliament today. What we got out of it was right to abode, where you have to stay in Ghana for 7 years. You can't leave in order to have the right to be there. And then you still can't vote. Not that voting means anything in my book anyway. Okay. But there are plenty groups of people over there doing farming. There's optometrists over there building their businesses. There are people building Pan-African schools. There's a chief up in the Okosombo area that gave the diaspora, which is us, 30,000 acres of land in a beautiful area right by a river. They're building houses. They've had their fights. You know, they've had their over the years. It's growing slowly, but it's coming forth. At one time, the chief was going, literally, they were sharpening their blades to cut some heads off because they were given that land, and then some people from Detroit, a couple of people came up there with their, you know how we do, and then they were selling plots of land, selling them over and over again to unsuspecting people that were in love with Africa that would come over there and buy them a plot of land and then come back over on this side. Mama got sick or they couldn't get back over there, so they gave you 2 years to build because they have rules in Africa. You don't hold land in Africa. You have to use it. Because they don't have the concept of private property. However, Europeans are over there now trying to drive that concept in, and a lot of the people in Africa are losing their homes because of it, because they got Barclays Bank over there where they go get a little small loan and they can't pay it back. They use their house for collateral. They lose a big four-bedroom house for some little small loan. So, you know, that's the bankster trick, right? Because basically what the way they build in Africa, they save up their money, they lay their foundation. They run out of money, it may be 2 years before they can build up walls up and get the roof up. And when they finish building their house, they own it. They don't have no mortgage. But they do have mortgages in Africa because they brought in banks and the banking concept, and that's how they usurp the land from the people. The state has offices where the diaspora goes over there and get them a plot of land, and then they go register it because we've been trained real well over here, see? So they go register the land. Now you just registered the land with the state, so you just gave up your allodial rights. You know, now you took that land out of the sphere of the chief, whose job is to distribute the land for use. You get a 99-year lease that can be renewed, but they don't have the concept. Traditional Africa doesn't have the concept of owning land because they are sense enough to know nobody don't own the earth except the creator.
Well, that was very well said, except that the time span is only 50 years.
Well, where I was, it was 99 years. I was in Ogwa, Cape Coast, and it was 99 years.
Well, the Constitution said 50 years.
I was talking about the chiefs. I'm talking about traditional land. I'm talking about renewed land from the chiefs.
Same thing ongoing, but you was pretty close. That's all right.
Where you go take a bottle of gin and sit down and talk to the chief.
Yeah. And you can become citizens. Let's get married.
I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that if that's what someone can do. But this whole I just wanted to dispel the myth that a whole bunch of people are going to go back to to Africa, and that's going to solve our problem. That's all I was trying to do. Individuals can go back. They have skills. Or groups can go back and work together if they have skills. I've seen a lot of groups come and go. A big group, 16, you know, all of them married, and they're all divorced by the time they leave, okay?
Well, yeah, that's the way that goes. And blacks in America have a culture. Their culture is called the American culture. And it has various subcultures intertwined with it.
They were assimilated into a larger culture.
Well, yeah, that's the way it usually happens. It's not the idea to try to change a person's culture. You exploit the opportunity that exists, and many people are doing it. And we're starting to hear more people talk along those lines about the economics. We hear kids protest. They talk about economics. They're not talking from it as direct as they should be, but they get there. And it's the old adage of there's no stopping an idea whose time has come.
Yeah. Let me add some cloud. This is Michigan. You know, if you pick up where Marcus Garvey left off, he really wasn't pushing a back to Africa movement from a body's perspective, meaning everybody pack a gym bag and carry your ass back over to Africa. And I don't think any Pan-African would be pushing that idea. But, you know, what I see is, and what he said was, until you see a strong Africa, you won't see a strong African anywhere on the planet. Now, just keep that in context. And I think what he means by that is, if you look at Africa, it's about to become the next, what would you say, everybody's rushing to Africa, right? And so, this is where black technology, manufacturing, the black technology centers, the black manufacturing centers, and to distribute these products, you know, and technologies back into the diaspora. I think that's at the core of Pan-Africanism. Like you said, it would probably be easier to start a toilet tissue manufacturing plant in Uganda versus Chicago. It would probably be easier to start a car manufacturing company in Kenya or Nigeria for blacks than it would be in, say, St. Louis. And so, just like America, now 30, 40, 50, 60% of the products that are sold here in America that we are buying, black folk are buying, they're not even made in America. So, you know, this idea of blacks say, well, screw Africa. We need to take care of ourselves. Well, every damn thing you eat and buying and cell phones and shit that we're talking on is not made in America, and we gobbling that shit up. So why not make Africa your black mecca where manufacturing, technology, your schooling institutions, all of your knowledge is coming out of there and moving out into the world. And I think at its core, that's what Marcus Garvey was saying about back to Africa. Not that everybody take their last $20 and move to Africa. Hell, I don't think they would go most blacks over there, and I wouldn't either.
You took the words right out of my mouth, brother. And like I said, they haven't made it possible for us to just come to Africa without having a visa. So that tells you right there that, you know, if they want to open the doors, like I said, like the Europeans over here do, there's many countries that can come here. They don't have to have a visa. Now, most of them are being bought and paid for, so they'll join NATO, but that's, you know, they lure immigrants in, the ones that they want. But Africa's not doing that for us. Let me just say this and I'll finish. But see, and I think we are kind of arrogant when we sit up and talk about, because we're descendants of African ancestors, we got gold and we got this. But they, when we come over there, they don't see us as African, indigenous African. You see, so we over there talking like some white folks, talking about our gold, okay, and our oil and this. And they're already all over there mining it anyway. The Ashanti gold mines is now the Anglo gold mines. So that's all.
That's not really true what you're saying there, Goldie. You was born, and I don't know what your ethnicity is, but I know what mine is, and I know what Michigan man. Michigan man is a citizen of Liberia. All he has to do is go take it out. He's a citizen of Liberia, therefore Liberia is a member of ECOWAS, and therefore he would not need a visa to go into the ECOWAS countries.
Okay.
So that's not true.
Make was on the broader scale of the continent of Africa. I was trying to point out that the number of 53 nations, not all of them, opened the door for us to come. That was my point.
Well, quite natural. Egypt's not, but we talking about the SADC states and also the ECOWAS states.
Okay, but I was talking
and
about
even in Kenya and Ethiopia. But no, quote unquote Negroes are born citizens of Liberia. That's the way their constitution reads. You go apply for your citizenship, you become a citizen, you get your passport, you have an ECOWAS passport, and you don't need a visa to go into those other ECOWAS countries, which pretty much curtail all the ones down in Central Africa.
Well, that's good information to know, but again, I repeat, the point I was trying to make was that the continent of Africa, all the nations don't have the door open to us that way. That's all. The only point I was trying to make.
Oh, no, I didn't.
That was my point.
Yeah, right. Angola don't. And,
I consider myself a descendant of Africans.
Angola don't. And African. Egypt and.
Egypt is Arab. That's an Arab culture.
But it's on the continent of Africa.
Yeah, but so is Libya, and they done killed 10,000 dark-skinned Libyans in the last couple
Libya
years.
Don't have that agreement either. But the ones that are pertaining do have that agreement. The person want to, and quite frankly, I wouldn't want some of these people that I know of that living next door to me over there anyway. I don't like them living next door to me here. Let's try to send them up there to Michigan, man.
I did want to throw this in real quick. One of the things that stood out, one of the things that Dr. Claude Anderson said on the that recording, the last recording that I played, that stood out, and I kind of wanted to highlight it for a second. But that stood out to me, that is when he said that during the 20s, in particularly the 1920s, he said our communities kind of peaked, you know, from an economic standpoint, and he talked about how during the 50s and 60s, they saw a decline, a huge decline in our economies, our communities, and so on, during this push for integration, and he talked about how it harmed the sense of unity, the sense of trust, and this sense of a joint connection that we seem to have had at that particular time. So, so after hearing that, my question to those who may be more familiar with it, because I definitely wasn't here during any of those times, the 50s, 60s, or none of that. What do you guys think about that statement when he made that comment?
What did he say?
Yeah,
well, I just wanted to say something.
In the 20s, you know, the community peaked you know, our economies, our communities were peaking, and, you know, we were doing pretty good in a variety of different areas. And he said that by the 50s and 60s, during that push for integration and some of the other things that was going on, he talked about how that hindered the unity, the trust, and the sense of joint connection that we had at the time. And so how that could play a role to what we see working today, you know, how it's hard to sometimes get people working together.
It's not hard to get people working today. If you got it,
I'm not saying it's not hard to get pockets of people here and there. I'm not saying that. When you hear people talk about us working as a collective in comparison to how some other collectives work together. That's what I mean.
Blacks do work as a collective. Look at I was in Jackson, Mississippi over the weekend. The whole town is black.
Hold on one second. I gotta stop you one more because I gotta make sure my context is in line.
I want to make sure it's not misunderstood when I'm speaking. We had the ability
to employ our own, to build our own, to control our own schools and everything. Everything, we had our own everything. And he was talking about how we peaked in all those areas. There was no area of commerce. There was no area of academia. There was no area in which we did not only touch, but we owned it, we ran it, we didn't depend on anybody else, and it was all ours. And we were at that time pretty much a threat to the system from a economic standpoint, because our politics, our economy was all our own in spite of all the adversity and stuff we faced. And then that shit.
Originally, when I made my first comment about being precise, and he's absolutely right. Now you see how this, the mistake of we're all humans. Civil rights, let's walk hand in hand. You see how costly that mistake was. And quite frankly, like Amos Wilson said, some mistakes, when you're talking about social science, can be devastating and you can never recover from. To me, I believe the civil rights mistake is one of those mistakes, because now we're scrambling. We're scrambling now trying to reshuffle the money on this monopoly game and do. Now we're trying to do what we have already done. Let's stick together. Let's do our own banks. Let's do our own grocery stores. If some of those people who were living then could hear some of the conversations we're having now, they would be like, what the hell happened? Right? Because we're saying let's do stuff that they already did. But see, you know, with this, let's just forget it and let's just be American. Let's just see that shit don't work, man. It don't work.
Okay.
And none of the rest of the world is thinking like that.
Okay, can I make my comment, please? I wasn't living back then, but I still have to know my history, and this is just my opinion on it. The civil rights movement is what we needed in this country. The bill was good, but listen, the bill was good. The Constitution is good if you could exclude the 3/5 clause, but the people are not living what is written down. That's the problem. Listen, if you look at it, segregation and civil rights is basically saying if someone discriminates against you and not give you your right, you have a right as a black American to sue them and take them to court, whether you win or lose. We didn't have that before. The civil rights, the desegregation, it's just said, it didn't say you must be around white people. It said you have the right. You can go any place you want to. So the people at that time, the citizens at that time, they misunderstood the law. See, we have the right to vote, but no one says you must vote. Like Australia, they said their citizens must vote. If not, they'll get penalized. We don't have that in this country. So you must distinguish your must do. You must do something, and your right to do something. It's that choice. That's what it was. Now, no one said that when we wrote these, when people wrote up the Civil Rights Bill, that they automatically made blacks have to do that. No, it guaranteed affirmative action, diversity in this country. And I want to say this. Other cultures, Asians, they're not separate from whites. They pay their taxes. They're not separate from blacks. Hold on. Listen to me. They're not separate from blacks. If they come in our community and take our money, there is no separation, factually. You can't. You can't separate yourself from your customers. But I'm saying the mindset, I agree, as a community as a whole, we should do that. So when we say these things, looking back on it, I think as a community, we got things screwed up. So looking back at it now, having said that, we never can totally be separated. You're talking about this separation. It can't be, right? Because you can't be living in the same house with somebody and totally say you're separated from them. But have your way. Get in your little huddles. Have your little groups. Have your connections with other people. Listen, on the state level, you're going to send some black representatives to your state level, and they're going to be dealing with who? Other people that are not their color and they don't come with their community. If you send a black representative on the federal level, they're going to be dealing with other people. So that's what I'm saying. We can have our own and deal with other people at the same time, just like you can be an individual and be with the group at the same time. That's all I wanted to say. I just think we got it screwed up.
Well, you know, some ethnic groups do separate in the United States to a certain degree. And they do it by the way they live. And it was Section 5 of the 14th Amendment that permitted Congress to come up with the Civil Rights Act. And they done a good job in doing that. That's what they were supposed to do. I mean, it was given their marching orders in the 14th Amendment, Section 5, and that's what they done. Blacks did not have the privileges of a full citizen in the United States at the time of 1964. Not all over the country. Blacks in the North was voting. Blacks in the South was being restricted with all sort of gimmicks and so forth. So that had to stop. Today, gays and lesbians have the opportunity to express themselves in pursuit of their happiness. And that's also spelled out in the 14th Amendment. So that's the way it is. But blacks live in enclaves. Whites live in enclaves. They may co-mingle during the day, but at nighttime, people go their separate ways, and they got a right to do just that. It's not saying that people are separate as if you got a disease or something. It's just they acting out their preference who they want to associate with and who they don't want to associate with.
Let me ask something. You know, in all facts, you know, it really is those type of statements that's got our shoes tied in a knot. And I'm not. That's not a slight at you, brother. But for instance, when you say, "Oh, Asians are not separate from blacks. They have their businesses in your community. You can't be separate from your." The business owner can't be separate from his customer. Of course he can. The Asian has absolutely nothing to do with you. You are a market to him. That's a market. He sees you as a market, not a citizen. You're a market. He is separate from you, and you're separate from him.
What does separation mean? I mean, academically, what does separation mean? That means no connection.
Let him finish first, Offex.
That's easy, brother. We're talking about a separation in mentality, a separation in your economic ideology, a separation in your spiritual ideology, a separation in your ideology of what community means. He sees himself as his community, not you. So you're separate in that way. And in group phenomenon, that's the only thing that matters. In group phenomenon, emotion is no, we don't need emotion. You don't need a people to like you. You see what I'm saying? So
no.
When you say civil rights, when you're talking about growth phenomenon, you don't need white folks to like you. So why would you go after civil rights?
Okay.
One more quick thing. At the base of the civil rights movement was one aberration, and that is looking for a political identity. That's it, bro. Blacks had no political identity. That's why they were squabbling.
Yeah. Right. And see, that's what I said first. See, that's when I went. Right. And hold on, real quick. You made my point, and this is the problem. I identify myself. Some people trying to convince me to try to label me. I know who I am, but politically, our conversations politically, you have us black people still trying to identify ourselves in this country. You have a lot of young black men in the hoods. Don't know or how to identify themselves in this country. A black male, they want to say, well, really, you're not an American. Really, you're not a black American. You're African. Don't call yourself black. You shouldn't vote. You should do this. See, the black male has, has an identity crisis. That needs to end. If you're a black American in this country or whatever you want to describe yourself with, you're struggling, you know your history. I would say either you're going to live in this country and go forward and claim something. If not, you need to make your decisions. But going back and forth and saying I'm not this and I'm not that and you're actually living with this country, and I want to say this, now be quiet. When people say that we can, if you say stop spending your money with the Asians and we can turn this around and have our own business, I guarantee you if we turn our spending power around, we will affect the Asian business and the Asian community because we're not separate from them. I understand what you're saying concept-wise by ideology, but factually, when we're dealing business, when they come in our community, they're not separate from us. So we say that we're not separate from them. We can say co-op. We can change them. We can change their economics because we're giving them our money. So when you use this word separation, what does that mean? And if you look at it and apply to the life and business, I agree, but we're not.
Well, let me ask you something, All Facts. You ever been to D.C. before?
Yes, it's right up the road.
Well, go up there in Chinatown in D.C.,
okay,
and see how many black businesses are in Chinatown. You know what China? You know when you walk through them gates, and I can't think of the street, whether it's Broad Street, I think, I don't know. Go in there and see how many black-owned businesses lie within that market area that's called Chinatown there in D.C. and also in Chicago, and also in San Francisco, where they probably had the largest ones. And you don't see that. Matter of fact, when a building is vacant, they don't even advertise it. You can't find it in the paper. Same thing with the Hill here in St. Louis, which is controlled by Italians. When a house becomes available for sale, you can't go to the newspaper and say, well, let me see if I can find a house for sale up here in the Hill. No, it's all about word of mouth. And they got a right to do that, really. So that's
right.
One of the aspects that he's talking about. Now, the Civil Rights Act put in place where it was illegal to discriminate. Now, there's nothing wrong with discrimination as long as you don't violate a person's civil rights. And the Civil Rights Act specified that, well, it's nothing wrong with discrimination, but you cannot discriminate from another American citizen on the grounds of his race, creed, color, and national origin. Because before that time, it was you was being discriminated because of that. I remember one time I was up in Detroit working on an office building, putting up an office building across the street from the Highway Patrol there, office on 75, Highway 75. And I needed a place to stay. So I got in the paper and found a room in the house, and I called the lady up. And I guess because I was talking white, she said, sure. Or should I say that sounded white? She said, sure. Come on over and take a look at it. But, Michael, when I parked my brand-new Thunderbird in front of the house and walked up the steps and knocked on the door, and she hurriedly opened the door, but when she seen who I was, it was her left hand, no, her right hand that came up to her mouth. And she like, oh. And I said, I was the one who called you about the room. And she said, well, I'm sorry, we don't have it. And I said, lady, are you discriminating against me? And she said, look, just please, just go away, go away. Which I did anyway. But that was discrimination. And because of the Civil Rights Act, that there made what she done illegal. At one time, you could do that. Sometimes places, it still goes on today. But it is illegal, and with that illegality comes about some consequences.
Right. And that's why we have these organizations to investigate these things. In businesses, we would go shop other businesses and be mystery shoppers. Sometimes you have to do that and to enforce these things, because a lot of people march and die for these things. Numbers, identifying yourself. How, when Google and all these technology companies say we only got 2% African-American and Hispanic working for our companies, where did they get those numbers? People had to identify themselves on applications. How are we going to, you know, do these? So identifying yourself, well, it's very important in a diverse society. It's just a multicultural society. This country was founded by just not your opinions. Unfortunately, other cultures, slaves, built this country. It is what it is.
Well, slaves didn't build the entire country, so don't say that. But here's the point, that the first...
they didn't build the entire country, no, but they built the country. They were part of it.
Well, Indians, Native Americans, Italians, they did too.
Since we are over time, I want to throw this in. With all that's been said so far, I know the original question that Mr. Talk posed was, "Am I my brother's keeper?" And just based on what we've discussed so far, and just you guys' own personal perspective, what if you were asked that question, what would you say?
Well, I would say that all blacks in the United States are not the same. So to say it depends. That can be, are you your human brother? Are you your organization brother, Mason, that got the secret handshake and all that stuff?
Right.
So
they hook you up with them jobs.
It has to be.
I never seen an unemployment broke Mason. They do hook each other up with jobs.
It has to be a little bit more. I can say no in some views, and I can say yes in others. It just depends.
Okay. I'm just trying to keep my children right now until they get older. I'm trying to keep them. That's my own brothers, but. It's hard, man. I mean to keep someone, and you gotta have at least be honest and have the same goals and try to stick together. But there's a lot of games out here with people, and you just want to have someone on the right mind. Especially when you talk about business, you have to socially like somebody as the brother to break bread with them.
Of the promise keepers. Myself, Michigan man, you part of the promise keepers, aren't you?
The what? What the hell is that?
Oh, boy. It's good to laugh and have fun, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
But, you have gotten a little bit more astute in your conversation. The first time I met you,
were you going to answer it? I was still trying to see what people's answer was going to be about.
I can't answer it, really.
And definitely this question, I would agree with Bianchi. I mean, it's an ambiguous question. I mean, you have to be more specific. But Bianchi pretty much gave the most precise answer to the question. I mean, yes or no? What do you mean?
You said it's a yes or no?
No, I said it could be yes in an instance and no in an instance. I mean, it really is an ambiguous question. you need to be more specific. That was the point.
Okay. No, I mean that's what the show is entitled. That's why I threw it out.
Yeah,
I was trying to stay on, you know. And anybody else who wants to, you know, get in on that part, could definitely speak to it or make their contribution.
Well, I guess you have to, first of all, you got to identify each other's brothers first. And I think we have a probably hard time getting to that point. What you think, Cloud?
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, you're live now, Maze.
Okay. Can I give an answer to that?
Yeah, I just got back.
Okay. Can I give an answer?
Sure.
Can you be your brother's keeper? This should be the question. Because
okay.
There's a lot of things in the way of being a brother's keeper. There's trust. You got trust and jealousy don't go together. And then there's friendship and mess don't go together. But if you got a brother is your brother for life. That means being your brother's keeper, you got his back in the good and the bad. When he's right and he's wrong, you correct him. You don't fall out with him and do things that is not common. And when it comes to the community, what's wrong with the community is that you have a community, but everything that makes your community survive, you give it to somebody else and they take it home. You go to the store and you purchase something and they go home with the money and you're just left with what you purchased that day. So you're feeding other people with the money that you have. Can you hear me?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I can eat.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.